This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
What is going on, everybody? Dan Grasso and Willie Colon. Hey. Sitting in for Chris Carlin tonight up until 10 o'clock at 800-919-3776. Brian Mungia, Mike Aleshmagoon producing the program here this evening. Willie C.
Yes.
My man, this is like... Man. This is like seeing an old family member again, you and I getting to do this.
It's nothing like getting the Doobie Brothers back together. It feels good.
The band
good.
Is back together.
It's Tuesday. We got a lot Wednesday. To talk about. Oh, sorry. It's a rough start. It's Wednesday. I apologize.
Well, that's right. I've been going around all day thinking it was Thursday.
Man, you know what it is? I'm one of those guys that don't – I'm on autopilot all the time. So I don't really pay attention to the days, but I appreciate you cleaning me up real quick.
But I missed you. I mean, I think it's been about 3 years probably since you and I worked together.
Well, I've been busy. I've been on the other side of the fence, just kind of shuffling, moving, doing what I do. Now I'm out here back in the saddle with you, brother. You look great. You look shaven. For a man that's shooting from the crib, you look shaven. So that means you're well kept. You're doing well for yourself.
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. Trying to stay fit, trying to stay in shape. You look spectacular as always. However, and this is where we got to start today. We got a lot to get to.
You know,
we're
going
to get into all the baseball. We'll get into game one of the NBA finals.
Great game last
Aaron
night.
Aaron Rodgers stuff. All that stuff. A Mets had a walk-off win this afternoon. But here's where we got to start. Because, and I'm going to let you do all the talking here. this is our first show of the week.
Yeah.
But it wasn't supposed to be our first show of the week.
This should have been probably
our third show of the week. But something happened the last couple of days. Why don't you take over the floor?
Yeah, Dan. So as Dan mentioned, Monday was supposed to be our first day back in the saddle.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to, you know, before I was about to come in, I was going to do a honey-do list, right? Every man has a honey-do list where the wife puts it out on a piece of paper or sends you a text and says, hey, buddy, before you cast away and do whatever you guys do and try to, you know, do whatever men do, right. I need you to take care of these things. So I was in the backyard cleaning, which I don't do. I'm not a cleaner. Not to say I'm a messy person. I'm just not a cleaner. But the wife was like, listen, you got to take care of the backyard. So I'm in the backyard cleaning up some stuff, and I have a bunch of stuff in my hand. And particularly one thing was this aluminum, it's like a candle, if you will. Scentinella, if you will.
An aluminum scented candle.
Yeah,
okay.
it was like Scentinella candle. It was aluminum. So I'm thinking it's 10. Anyway, I step on one of these pavers before I walk into my home, my back door, and the thing shoots out right underneath my foot. Boom, I hit the floor. This thing shatters, and it slices my thumb. Now, this is the problem, Dan. Most guys, and people in general, if you've ever been hurt, you kind of tough it through. You try not to make any – well, at least I'm not a screamer. I try not to be dramatic about things. This thing went right through my thumb, right? So I'm looking at my thumb peeled over, busted open, gory situation, something out of a crime scene.
A Fourth of July horror movie.
No question. So, of course – this isn't, in no pun, this isn't a JPP situation. I'm not playing with fireworks. I'm not all over the place. I'm just doing my honey-do list. And I'm holding my thumb. It's a gory situation. So, of course, first of all, you know what's frustrating about the whole situation? And I excuse my redundancy if you're using
aside
the word.
From having your thumb cut open, there's another frustration.
Well, this is the thing.
Yeah.
Like in the movies, you ever hear somebody yell out like, oh, Samantha, come save me. Or
right.
Dan, I need your help.
Sure.
I'm yelling for my wife. Nothing. I'm in the back of my home screaming for my wife. There's nothing.
Of course.
So of course I go through the Rolodex of who's in my home. My mother-in-law happens to be in town. Mm-hmm. So I'm screaming for my mother-in-law. Nothing. So I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do? So I'm like, oh, we were fortunate enough to have a nanny. I'm calling for the nanny to help with my one-year-old son who's helping.
Yeah.
Nothing. So like, so now I got to go into emergency. So I'm running up the back stairs.
Where is everybody?
Everybody's in the house. Everybody's in the house. So I'm running up the stairs. And I'm a right-hand dominant. I'm a righty.
Yeah.
I can't open a door. My left hand is currently holding my thumb together. So I start kicking the back window. I'm fortunate my mother-in-law, who comes over, is like, oh, we got a serious situation. Now, she's an anesthesiologist. So she's seen some things. She's like, we got to get you to the emergency room. So my wife, who's coming, you know, comes running. She's like, what's going on? By the way, everybody out there, my wife is extremely pregnant. My daughter will be here.
It could be during this show, for all we know.
That is, my phone's on high alert right now.
Right.
So my wife's like, we got to get you to the ER. So we jump in the car. We zoom to the ER. Thank God the hospital's only like 8 minutes away. I'm in the car, but I'm in the passenger seat. My wife's driving. She swings out. She swings the door open, jumps out. And my wife is big old belly. Big old mama bear belly, My wife is all of 5'1", 5'2", so she looks extra pregnant. Short women look extra pregnant because they're just sticking out here. And the dude that sees her, who's helping, is now he's like, oh, I got to get a wheelchair. This lady's about to go.
Because they think it's for her, not you.
They think it's for her.
Oh,
so they leave
goodness.
Me in the passenger side. I can't grab the door. I can't even roll down the window because my left hand is currently holding my thumb together. And so my wife's like, no, my husband. So the guy opens the door, swings open the door. He's like, all right, let's get you inside. We get inside to go through the whole paperwork. Anybody who's ever been to the ER understands the situation. We get in the back.
Everything's got to be documented.
Everything's got to be documented.
Yeah, always.
Insurance. Have you been vaccinated? The whole words. I'm good. I'm clean. I'm vaccinated. All this stuff. We get in the back. The doctor is a little smug with me, Dan. I don't know if he had his coffee. I don't know if he's had a couple bad incidents, but he's very smug.
And did you think he was getting the Monday off after 4th of July?
Yeah, I don't think
maybe,
he was happy. It's July 5th.
Right.
I mean, the trashmen, they're home. They're enjoying their day. Mm-hmm. So he's sitting there. He's like a little smug with me. Comes back in. He goes, oh, I didn't know you played for the Steelers and Jets. Whole attitude change. Now he's calling the hand specialist. Now he's the sweetest man on earth. And I was like, why should that matter? You should have been helping me.
So let me stop for a second. So basically what you're saying is, if there was no Steelers, if there was no Jets involved at all,
correct.
Who knows what shape your thumb would be in right now?
I may not have a thumb.
You may not have it.
Yeah, I may.
You might be wearing it as a keychain or something.
Correct. It may have been. I would have had, I don't know. I don't know what I would have had. I don't know, Dan, but I knew that his mood changed when he found that I was a Steeler and Jet. And so here I am, thankful that I was able to play in the league that helped me save my thumb later down the road.
Ironically enough.
So, but we was able to get a hand specialist in the house who reminds me of John Candy. Sweet man, but he walked in like John Candy.
Wait a sec. So John Candy is the hand specialist.
Yes. Wasn't gratifying, by the way.
But
judge a book by his color, by a cover, but I'm sitting here like, man, I just wanted this guy to look more in shape. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, but you know what? He wasn't going to eat the thumb, though. So,
no.
But this story keeps getting better and better now that because now I'm visualizing. I'm visualizing John Candy walking into this situation. This is phenomenal. Go ahead.
And then so I just pictured a hand specialist to be a little more, just a little more dainty. This guy looked like he was a bricklayer.
Well, let me ask you this. How were his hands since he's a hand specialist?
He had thick hands. Like he had hands like a butcher, which doesn't help. It doesn't help when you're struggling trying to attach your thumb back together that you're dealing with a butcher. But he was great. He was really great.
So John Candy got the job done.
He did, because I'm here. I'm casted up, talking to you. It's Wednesday. I'm aware
of
that
stitches?
Now. I don't know. I actually didn't look. I watched the process, but I didn't pay attention to it all.
They didn't tell you. You didn't ask.
I didn't ask. So I was fortunate enough not to cut the tendon. Just kind of cut the belly of it. So it's a little gory. They got it stitched up. I'm fine. I was able to have a burger afterwards, so that helped a lot.
With your left hand?
With my left hand, correct. So here I am.
So all because of a candle?
All because of a candle, and maybe because I'm not as nimble as I used to be, which led to further conversations with the wife. You need to get your weight down. Younger Willie would have whop got out of there, which is I'm like, no, it's not it. It's the paver's fault.
Well, how about this? How do you feel about candles? Like, is your wife candle crazy? Because you said you had the candle outside.
Yes, for
and
the mosquitoes.
And you were bringing this back in. Oh, for the mosquitoes.
You
okay,
know what I mean?
Cincinnati,
yes. Yeah, get rid of the bugs. That's what we're doing.
Okay. I don't know if it was one of these, like, what we got. Because my wife has about, like, 97 different varieties of those.
Yeah, we're not a big candle family.
Yeah, I'm like, I trip over them in my house.
Yeah, candles can be obnoxious. Yeah, we're
I agree.
A big candle family.
I totally. And now we found out that they're dangerous.
Now, if you're a 300-plus man and have candles and you happen to fall and they explode in your hand, they can be very dangerous.
Yeah, but I think you're being too hard on yourself. Though,
maybe,
because,
Dan.
No, you are. You are. Because realistically, even if you want to say in football shape and in the prime of your career, what could you have done differently? And that your hands were full. Didn't you have like a million things in your hand?
In
you
my
said?
Wife's eyes, she expected me to do a backflip like a Ninja Turtle.
And
land on
eyes.
Both feet. Yeah, in her eyes. That's what
but
I would
in
capable.
Your eyes and in reality's eyes.
Right. What happened? Gravity took over.
Gravity took over.
That's exactly what happened.
But I'm glad you're feeling better, though.
I'm better. I'm sore. It's a little frantic around my house because, you know, when you got a mama bear walking around, we went to do the sonogram Tuesday.
Right.
My daughter, who will be here any day now, she's like, all right, how many times are you going to look at pictures? Let's get the show on the road.
She wants out.
She wants out. And I think Mama wants out, too. See, I think she's over it. So here I am, talking to you.
Well, we got to get this thumb healed because, you know, when the baby comes, you got to have all 10 of the digits. You know what I'm saying? You got to have this all rocking and rolling because you're going to have the newborn. Plus, you're going to have your son who's at home already.
Oh, man.
Right?
And he's a tyrant. I mean, he's out of control. What's even worse, you know what's the most frustrating thing? And I know a lot, we're in New York, so we deal with a lot of construction workers and people who deal with sharp objects and do what they do. Like, the most frustrating thing isn't, like, brushing my teeth or washing myself, which I do bathe. I'm an advocate of taking showers. It's putting on my belt. Trying to put a belt through your pants with your non-dominant hand is frustrating. It almost took me, I almost walked to the store with no pants. I just almost gave up. I was that frustrated with the belt, trying to put my belt on this morning.
That's like on one of those like wacky game shows during like the obstacle course round. Like those are the things they have you do. Hey, put a belt on with the hand they're not, or like one hand tied behind your back, but it's not your dominant hand. No, that's misery.
It was a tough morning, but you got to persevere. And I'm like one of those guys, like we talked about it a little bit before we jumped on air.
Yeah.
I kind of have a little bit of Parcells in me. You know what I mean? I don't complain. There's no crying in baseball. Push through it. Don't look back. Keep fighting forward. You know? Let the ambulance sort them out.
Don't tell me about the pain. Just show me the baby.
There you go.
That's a famous one.
So when
right?
you try to, I'm trying to lead by example for my wife. She's not having it. She's all about the pain and telling you how it feels.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Appreciate
I'm proud of you that you're here. I'm proud of you that, you know, you're okay, all things considered. And she'll come around, though, because, look, you know it and I know it. In a couple of days, when now your family has an addition, you know that she's going to need you. She's going to need the good hand, the recuperating hand. She's going to need all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, no thumbs and no sleep. That's where we're at right now.
That's where you're
sleep
at.
And thumbs don't exist in a Cologne house.
Well, see, I'm glad at least then that we get to spend some time together doing this show to maybe keep your mind away from all that stuff, which you're going to be totally preoccupied with soon.
Right.
And we got enough to preoccupy us here over the course of the next few hours. As we said, Mets had a walk-off win today. We'll talk about that. Yankees continuing their trip out west tonight in Seattle after a lopsided win last night. Sun strike first in the NBA Finals. Lot of stuff we got to get to. We also heard a little bit from Aaron Rodgers last night about maybe what his plans are going to entail come September and whether or not he's going to go back to Green Bay. So I'm excited. You're excited. Good win for the Mets today, Will.
Huge.
Out at Citi Field. Taking the first two games from this series against Milwaukee, a team that they could realistically see in the playoffs because they're both in first place. And they beat Brandon Woodruff the other night. They beat Corbin Burns today. Those are their two best pitchers, both guys going to the All-Star game. And today, you know, this was a game where they actually, you know, picked up DeGrom a little bit because he was pretty good, but he was a human again. He gave up two runs only. And then they fought back, tied the game, forced extra innings, and then you saw Jeff McNeil come through with the walk-off. It's just, look, I don't know how you feel about it. I'm not a big fan of the seven-inning doubleheaders. I got it when they did it last year because of the pandemic and you wanted to get as many games in as possible in a short amount of time. But now that we're back to full capacity, and especially these split doubleheaders where you have two separate admissions, fans buy tickets for a full game and then they find out that, no, it's a seven-inning game. They don't get a discount on that. They don't get any of their money back. I don't like the seven-inning doubleheaders.
Well, I think you hit it right on the head. I think the fans feel misled, right? You talk about you walk into a ballpark, you think you're getting everything. You're like, well, wait a minute, that's not the case. And I also think it's just different. Major League is trying to cram as much baseball down your throat before we hit the break. But the games have been exciting. I mean, you talk about today's game. The Mets were down before I left the house. You know, you're down 2-1. And you have a game like this, and you're seeing this team and amazing Mets. First of all, the Mets are exciting to watch. As a Yankee fan, saying that out loud pains me, but they're exciting.
Look, I like the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees are struggling, but I mean, we'll get to that. But I am excited to see what the Mets have become and what they continue to become. Because, listen, this is a big win. Milwaukee's not – they are a tough team who, like you said, they're going to be in the playoffs. But they're also a team that you got to watch out for. And the Mets being in first, they're collected, they're resilient, they can come from behind, they can lead, they can get it done. And we're talking about the Mets now, right? And so the scenario and the storyline to who they are and what they've become this season is exciting. And I don't turning on the Mets on a Tuesday and on a Wednesday, I mean, that wasn't me. Now I'm doing it. So credit the Mets, man.
Well, and you know, again, guys like, you know, the bench mob, for example, all the unsung heroes this year for this team. Like Jose Peraza was the guy again today, hitting the game-tying home run in the seventh off of Josh Hader, no less. Josh Hader, who might be the best closer in baseball. He hadn't blown a save all season long, and Peraza takes him deep. The guy who's kicking back, throwing, you know, close to 100 miles an hour on the radar gun, that was a huge knock by Peraza. It would be nice if Lindor would actually get some of these clutch hits. I think Jose Peraza's gotten more clutch hits than Francisco Lindor this year, but that's another story for another time.
To see Lindor today emotional at the plate was something, because that's really not him. He's usually cool, calm, collected. He has the OBJ here. He's in his bag, but today he was frustrated.
But, you know, let me ask you a question, though. When you say that it's something, is it a good something or a bad something? Because I think that there's probably a lot more fans that think, you know, he's too happy-go-lucky always with the smile and the demeanor, that when he's not performing well and he's struggling, you know, you know how fans are. Fans don't like the cool calm, especially in this town. They want to see the angry,
they see
the agitated. Right, remember, Paul O'Neill, always throwing things in the dugout, throwing his bat. So I think fans want to see more of that.
Well, fans want to see you care as much as they do.
Exactly.
Even though you're the one out there performing, you're the one with the whole, you know, the dark cloud of a contract over your head. And you talk about all the woes that these players go through. Fans automatically, well, look how much he's getting paid. He's not giving us what he want. What
that's
we
a
want.
Lot of money, though, man.
It's a lot of money. But he's still human.
I mean,
he's not
a
robot.
That's a lot of cheese.
Yeah, but players go through it. And I try not, and especially on this, now that I'm on this side of the fence.
Yeah.
As far as media, I try to side with the media. Like, I try to see. But guys are human. Guys are going through it. It's an adjustment. We're coming out of COVID. Guys are figuring themselves out. I mean, we're about 70-plus games in. You would figure things are or where they need to be. But guys go through it. So,
well, here, you know what the thing about him is, though? He had a subpar season last year in Cleveland. Now, I granted, it was only 60 games. It was Fugazi, the season itself.
It was a wash. Everybody considered last year a wash.
But he struggled a little bit. But here's the thing that see, it's weird because the Mets can't seem to get a break. Because in the past, it was when you had the former ownership, they were criticized that they didn't spend money enough and they didn't have deep pockets and they wouldn't write big checks to some of these top players. Well, now they make the trade for Lindor, and before he even plays a game for them, they give him $341 million, and he's getting off to a start like this season. So it's like you can't have it both ways, right? You got the guy under contract. You're keeping him around. You would think you're getting a star player, but he's not performing up to the contract.
And I think a lot of times the contract does get in the way of a ball player. I know my time on the field, when anytime a guy got a new deal, or anytime the expectation and sort of the responsibility of to deliver was in front of them, they get in their own way. I don't know. Like, I've always been an advocate. Don't pay attention to the ritual. Pay attention to your routine. How are you getting ready? What are you paying attention to? What's your study like? How are you diving into the day-to-day grind for you to be the best you can be so you can live up to that contract? I don't know why the money gets in the way of a lot of ball players. It's happening for the Yankees. Gerrit Cole, Spidey Take, hello. The man's getting paid $324 million. He's not the same guy. He's not the guy we're looking for. But in reference to Lindor, sometimes you got to put the contract aside and say, hey, man, I got to go back to basics. But do you understand what got you there? Was it a coach? Was it your routine? Like, sometimes you got to investigate those things as a ball player so you can get back to where you need to be.
How much of it are you a big believer, though, in the whole New York thing? Right? Because we've seen guys come to this city, and I'm not just talking about baseball. I'm talking about other sports. You know, guys who are established players, star players in other cities, in other parts of their careers. They get traded over here or they sign with a New York team as a free agent and it just doesn't work out. And unfortunately, I think the Met fans specifically, they've been bitten way too many times because of this.
Well, they're always waiting for the narrative to turn bad.
Right?
Always.
Roberto Alomar, the classic example. And he came from the same place Lindor did, Cleveland, right? Roberto Alomar was an MVP finalist the year before he came to the Mets. He came to the Mets and he looked like an old man and he was shot. You know, Jason Bay, the big free agent contract they gave him, you know, all those years ago, came here, he was awful, did nothing. And I could go on and on and on about those players. But now, here's the difference, though. Not just $341 million, that's what, 10 more years on that contract? That's not, you're just, okay, we'll let the contract expire in a couple of seasons. No, you're married to this guy, essentially, for life.
But even with being married to a player, you still got to understand that he's going to go through his ups and downs, right? Like, as long as your philosophy stays the same and you're paying attention to what you want this guy to become and you're making sure that he's doing his due diligence, then ride with him, right? Because, like I've said it just a lot, like, nobody's going to be at the top of the game all the time. There's going to be the woes. And when you sign guys to big money and you're married to them like you are right now, you got to let them kind of figure it out himself, because there's nothing worse than a guy struggling from the neck up. From the neck down, that's life. That's going to happen. From the neck up, That's to say if you got a crack. Because if he's not locked in when he leaves the ballpark, if he's doubting himself or he's not paying attention to the little things where he can get better, right, then that's where you start to worry.
Well, I'll tell you this too. And this is breaking news for you. I don't know if you knew this. I've never signed a $340 million contract.
I'm shocked, actually.
Okay?
I'm never shocked.
Look, I'm being honest with you. We're friends. I got to be honest with you. Never signed that contract. I can only imagine. Now, this is just me. If I had a tremendous financial responsibility that an organization, or forget about it, let's just say like in our business, okay, an employer is going to saddle on my shoulders.
Right.
I, for one, would obsess constantly about living up to that commitment, about making sure I'm doing my part. So in the athlete's perspective, if you're going to put that kind of money in front of them, and it doesn't even have to be that kind of money. I mean, like, there's crazy money that doesn't even have to be $340 million.
Right.
There's pressing involved. I mean, you did this. You played. You wanted to go out there and make sure that you delivered every single snap, every single play. I mean, so I would like to think that that is factoring into this whole lack of performance, don't you think?
But you can't go to bed with it, Dan. You know what I mean? Like, New York is always
flush it.
New York's always going to remind you of your worth because our contracts are public. Ball players are reminded every time they get around their family members, right? When mama calls and she wants a new washer and dryer, well, baby, didn't you sign that big deal? Yeah. Mm-hmm. When your brother wants to buy a truck for whatever reason, then you sign that. So the ball player is always reminded about what they signed for, who they are, and what they mean to the ball club. It's up to the ball player now to say to myself, especially if you're in a slump or if you're not performing up to you, what your expectations are, is to start small. Get up. Prepare. It's not about film study all the time. It's about you collecting your mental thoughts. Like, man, what am I thinking am I at the plate? What am I thinking as I'm walking? Like, what's my routine? How am I assessing the game? And some guys get so caught up in the pure emotions and letting your teammates down, letting your manager down, letting the guys, you know, the fans who are watching you at the plate. Watch, you're kind of soaking that all in. Remember Shaq. Shaq said it. I remember him. He was talking about why did he suck at shooting free throws. Because right. He said he always thought about the guy underneath the basket that he was letting down. I'm like, think about that aspect. You're talking about one of the most dominant basketball players of all time. Was worried about Stan. You know, Stan eating a hot dog in a Mountain Dew. He was worried about letting him down. That's why you got to celebrate the guys who are elite, who are able to channel and really cut all that off and say, hey, I'm here to do the job. I'm here to go through my routine. I'm here to process the game and let the game come to me. If you're able to do that, that's how you get through these things. It's tough for a lot of ball players to do that because they're constantly reminded from mama to your coach to your ball club to the front office that, hey, you got a price on your head. This is what we're paying you to do. And when you play in a market like in New York where everything is blown up umpteenth degrees, you're never going to, you know, forget, or you're never always going to be reminded of your worth.
All right, so the Mets get a win today. DeGrom, his last performance before the break, what are his plans for All-Star Weekend, and do you agree with them? We'll talk about that next. Dan Grasso, Willie Colon here on 98.7 ESPN. Dan Grasso, Willie Colon in for Chris Carlin on this busy Wednesday in NYC, 98.7 ESPN. 800-919-3776 is the telephone number as we're with you till 10 o'clock this evening. If you want to get us on Twitter, feel free to do so. I'm at Dan Grasso, G-R-A-C-A. He is at Will Colon. 66 is where you can find us on the good old social media side of things. So a little bit more on the Mets. Jacob DeGrom pitched today. Didn't get a win, but he didn't get a loss either. He went the whole seven innings because it was the seven-inning doubleheader. Gave up two runs, a couple of solo shots, but he still struck out 10 hitters. Typical DeGrom game. Remember, he's kind of almost looked like a human pitcher the last few times out.
Right.
While not terrible, the last three games has seen his ERA almost double because it was like 0.5, and now he's at 1.08, which is still like out of this world.
He's stunning, man. He is. He's been a sight to watch. I got to be honest. When you're able to watch somebody as elite as him, you don't take notes. You just stand still.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? You just let the guy work, and you clap, and you appreciate because you know his time was like most great players or elite players is going to come to an end. So you want to sit back and say, man, I want to soak it all up. And then for a guy who's been peeking at the Mets, paying attention to him, man, he's been exciting. He's been exciting to watch.
And he's, I mean, not only is he the best at his craft and what he is, forget about just in this town, but in the game across the country. I mean, this is, he's the best pitcher in the game. I mean, you're talking about a guy who might be one of the best players in the game, and he only performs once every 5 days. That's how good he is, right? I mean, in the season that he's having, he's going to be an MVP consideration. Mm-hmm. Not just, I mean, the Cy Young he's going to get, but we're talking about an MVP here. Now, he also announced after the game today that he's not going to be going to Colorado for the All-Star game. Ordinarily speaking, I got no problem with this. And you can appreciate this from a player standpoint. Now, yes, it's an exhibition game. It means nothing. But on the other hand, yeah, I know that the year has been still a little challenging and not all 100% normal, and he's thrown a lot of innings and all that stuff. He probably wants a few days to rest, yeah, spend some time with his family, that sort of thing. But do you feel him, especially somebody like him, a superstar, the best pitcher in the game, do you feel that he has an obligation to Major League Baseball, maybe even to the Mets, but more to Major League Baseball, to at least show up? And even if he doesn't pitch, stand on the baseline during introductions, tip his cap, "Hi, I'm Jacob DeGrom, best pitcher in the game." Do you feel that way?
That's a good question. I think I feel like if he was a dominant hitter, if we're, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's different if we're watching a judge miss out, just for the sake of, like, listen, the last time I was out there, like DeGrom, he said it was the last time I was out in Colorado, I didn't feel as good. I felt a little, right. I walked out of there banged up. I didn't feel, you know, I want to be ready for my start next Sunday. I can understand that. You know what I mean? I think he's like, listen, I'm going to put the Mets first. I've been to the All-Star game before. I have it on my belt. I know what it entails. I know what the fans want to see. But we still got a lot of ball left. And I got it for us to be where we need to be come October. I got to be out there. And so I respect that process. But from a fan standpoint, I don't know. And from a player standpoint, I definitely respect it, because nobody knows your body like a player. You know, he has, right, to wake up every day. He knows what he should feel like. He knows his process and how he should go about how his business. If he already feels like, man, I've had enough scares, I'm a little iffy about certain things, then you got to respect it, because without him, the Mets aren't going to be – I mean, listen, they're in first place, so I don't want to say they're not going to be there in playoff time, but
right,
you need them out there. And so I'm all for it. I think a lot of fans hate it, because you want your guy, you want your champion out there, you want your prize horse to show off.
And he would be the guy. Remember, he would start the game for the National League, because,
yes,
he's the best pitcher, so he would get the start. So he would go out there and throw maybe an inning or two. I totally, like I said, I'm glad that he's not going to take the mound and throw at the All-Star game. But part of you, you know, just thinking about the All-Star game is when you're a kid, you're growing up, you're watching it. And look, baseball screwed it up too with these generic uniforms this year. The fact that the players are not even going to wear their own team uniforms,
exactly,
like you have every year in the All-Star game, that's a joke. That they're going to be wearing these generic, so everybody looks exactly the same uniforms. I mean, good job baseball by trying to single out and market some of your best players, your superstars. But that's typical baseball, dropping the ball. But I understand don't pitch them. But I don't know, like, you kind of, maybe it's like a nostalgia thing and maybe it's a naivete, I don't know. You do almost want to see the guys, the best and the brightest there, because you know what I'm afraid of, Will? People in this game, they're going to see DeGrom not go. And then other stars are going to be like, well, if DeGrom's not going, then I'm not going to go. And then the All-Star Games becomes the Pro Bowl. And with everybody dropping out. And then that becomes a joke to the point where nobody pays attention anymore.
We can spin it back a couple years. Remember when Judge was lighting it up? Did the home run derby? Did the, right, All-Star game, came back, couldn't find him on tape. He was struggled. So I think, yeah, that is in the back of a lot of guys' heads. Like, why am I going to go out there, possibly get hurt, even if it's an inning? I'm already a little iffy right now. I don't feel quite where I need to be for whatever reason. Guys are battling through the season. If you have the right to say, no, I'm good, then you should be able to say that. Fans can get over that. To your point, I think when it becomes a thing, like the Pro Bowl, and for Christ's sakes, Tyler Alford was out there, blew his ACL. At the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, if you're a Bengals fan, you're like, what? How? And so I'm for it. I think it's a situation where you got to let the players decide for themselves. And if it becomes a trend, then you have a problem. But I don't think that it's a trend right now. I think a lot of guys still appreciate lining up with a lot of guys and have respect for being out there.
Because it's all about, like, you know, when you talk about growing the game, and baseball's popularity has taken a hit here over the last few years. Maybe not so much in New York, but, like, nationwide, it's not as popular as it was when we were younger, okay? But you think about the Fernando Tatis Jr.'s of the world, the Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s, you know, Shohei Ohtani, for crying out loud. You got so much young talent, and stars in this game. But and the All-Star game is the perfect opportunity for the casual fan who may not get a chance to see these guys on a day-in, day-out basis. It's like, oh, now I get a chance to see watch this guy play, even if it's an exhibition. Oh, that's what he looks like. Oh, that's what team he plays for. And, you know, I understand and I totally appreciate everything you're saying, but I just don't want this to become a trend to where now the game really is a complete joke.
Well, I know for me, watching a lot of guys who went to the Pro Bowl year after year, and I'm speaking on the football side of things, watching guys like Ben Roethlisberger or Troy Polamalu, their biggest hiccup was, man, I'm already banged up through this season. You know what I mean? I got a shoulder, I got a knee, I'm dealing with a lot of things. The season's over, yeah, but I got to still talk to this doctor and see how I'm going to get cleaned up and get ready for next year. You know, even though it's fun for, you know, mom and dad and the kids to go out there, and at the time it was out in Hawaii, I still have to make sure I'm okay. You know what I mean? Because flying around the field and valid, you know, a guy, congratulations to Troy Polamalu. He's going into the Hall of Fame this year.
Yep.
But fans just want to see him fly around with their hair. They're not really care about his ankle, calf, and his ribs. You know, and his guy, too, we talk about contracts, especially Lindor, his contract is only at his key when he's performing at his best. And if it's already hiccups leading up to an All-Star game, then you gotta pull back.
Right, the obligation is to the team. And that's the thing with DeGrom, because here's the rainout last night, here's where it made things a little bit different for him in terms of his track for the rest of the week. He was supposed to pitch last night, and then he was scheduled to pitch Sunday, which was the last game before the All-Star break. Now the rainout last night meant he pitched today, and now it's not going to line up. If he were to pitch Sunday, that would bring him back on short rest. And I don't think that they should do that first and foremost. They would be crazy to pitch. Remember, it's against the Pirates first and foremost. They're a last place team, all right? You don't need to bring DeGrom back, who's already had injury scares this year, on short rest the last day before the All-Star break. You know what? Give him, if he's not going to go to Colorado, give him a week off. Let him rest. Let him get the first start right out of the break again and make sure he's 100% for that stretch drive in the second half of the season. That's what I would do.
And you know, Mets fans, if he was to play in an All-Star game and get hurt.
Oh.
That would be the...
Forget it.
Yes, that would be
well,
the...
Well, see, and here's the difference what you said about the Pro Bowl. Here's the difference between the two. When's the Pro Bowl? Pro Bowl's at the end of the season
Correct.
Already. The All-Star game is in the middle of the season. You still have the important game still to come, you hope. Let's hear from DeGrom. This was him after the game today talking about his decision regarding the All-Star game.
No, you know, I've thought about it, and, you know, obviously being named to an All-Star team is a great honor, but I'm going to take that time and just enjoy it with my family, whether I pitch Sunday or not, so, and get healthy for the second half, and, you know, hopefully, you know, Ty gets in there and takes my place.
Talking about Taiwan Walker, who's very deserving, of course, to be
man,
an All-Star,
I'm a fan of him.
Oh, I love him.
I watched him in the Subway Series. He's special.
Love him. Pounds the strike zone, doesn't mess around. And problem is, there's just too many damn good pitchers in the National League this year. And there wasn't enough room for everybody. So if DeGrom is out, they have to, because he's the only Met. Each team has to have one representative.
Right.
Hopefully it is Taiwan Walker. He deserves it. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I got no problem with it. I'd rather see him take the ball every 5 days wearing a Met uniform as opposed to going out there to Colorado and possibly throwing him off his routine a little bit.
One thing I'm not a fan of is, you know, what does this break look like for him? Is he going to be at the ballpark rehabbing? Is it a time where he's going to spend
with
his family? He's
going to go on a little vacay. Yeah, okay. A little vacay. I don't know, maybe someplace tropical for a few days. Or maybe, you know, maybe just hole up in the apartment or something. Put your feet up, hang out with the kids, that sort of thing, and then just become, you know, fresh and ready to go after the break.
Well, my point is, I don't want this, if you're afraid to throw one inning in an All-Star game,
yeah.
I also don't want to see you on a jet ski in the Bahamas.
If
we're talking about,
no banana boat?
Yeah, I don't want to see you on a banana boat. I also don't want to see you diving off. You know, I want to see you still as possible. So if you're worried about being sore and nicked up leaving an All-Star game, I want you to take that same approach. Find a cabana, get a tall drink, and relax. That's what I want to see.
Nothing wrong with the cabanas and the tall drinks. What do you think of game 1 of the NBA Finals?
It was exactly what I expected. Two teams battling out. I didn't expect old man Chris Paul to light it up like that, though. I knew he
was. Best player on the floor. He was the best player on the floor.
He seemed like he was... His mental side of the game is outstanding. Like I was watching when I saw Brook Lopez guard him, I was like barbecue chicken.
Oh well, I mean
when I started seeing the bigs jump on him, I was like barbecue chicken. You just knew that he was going to score and he was going to have his way with him. It was amazing. I thought the atmosphere just watching the finals. seeing the fans in the building, and just watching Phoenix, for Christ's sakes. I don't know about anybody else. I'm a New Yorker. I watch the Knicks. But seeing the Valley up in arms, going crazy, it was exciting, man. I enjoyed watching it.
I'll be honest with you. There were a couple of people, more than one occasion today, I talked to people who told me, point blank, they totally forgot that the finals started last night. Totally forgot. Now, you mentioned Phoenix, Milwaukee. Those aren't two national brands.
At all.
Right? So we were going to sit here and wonder, okay, what was going to be the enthusiasm as a whole for this series? I mean, whenever we talk Bucks-Suns, if you would have told me, I mean, normally that's like a summer league championship. Those are the two teams battling right. out in the summer league right. out in Vegas. Not for the title. But look, you got Paul, who's never been to the finals before. Giannis has never been to the finals before. We didn't know if Giannis was even going to play. I give him credit for going out there and lacing him up
and playing.
And you know what? Dude, he was better than I thought he was going to be. And thankfully for Milwaukee's sake, he didn't suffer any further injury. And I guess he came out from the game okay. But you could see he was a little tentative. I mean, he only took like 11 shots. You're going to need more from him. And you mentioned the Brook Lopez thing. I mean, Mike Budenholzer gets a lot of flack from people. And deservedly so at times. Because in the playoffs the last couple of years, when they've fallen short, you know, he's been slow to adjust. And the Suns, they kill you with that pick and roll.
Kill
you. They destroy you. I mean, if you watch the Suns, you know that that's what they do. And that's why, like you saw Stephen A. after the game last night on SportsCenter saying, it looked like the Bucks weren't even prepared at times. And I get that sense. And that's a perfect example how Lopez kept getting matched up with the two guards on the defensive end of the floor. What is that about?
Even when they switched it, they put Holiday on Chris Paul, and they tried to put P.J. Tucker on Devin Booker. And they were confused. Like, you could see there was so much discourse, and they were so out of sync. I think they expected the Greek Freak to save them. He gave them all they had. I mean, he was down in the post. He drove the hole. He used his muscle. He got up there. He dunked the ball a couple times. He had that great block in the first half when he was able to run that court and chase it down. But when you talk about Chris Paul and what he was able to do, man, you talk about 12 for 19 from the field, 4 for 7, 3-point range, 32 points, 9 assists. I mean, Chris Paul was on another. He understands 16 years in the game, this is my time. I can't waste this opportunity. I got to be aggressive. And anytime you see 2 7-footers on you in space, as long as he's rolling to the basket and he had big DeAndre Ayton right there to roll with him, he was throwing it up. He was either going to shoot it or he was going to go upstairs with it. And he did.
So you got the two best players on the floor last night were wearing Phoenix uniforms. And you know what? You could even make the case maybe it's the three best players with Ayton.
Yeah.
Because very, very quietly, the guy's like 20-20 every night. 20-20 every night.
And he's so young. And 22 points last night and 19 rebounds.
Dude, first pick in the 2018 draft. A 2018 draft that normally all we talk about is Luka Doncic and Trae Young from that draft. Well, this guy, as you said, first pick in the draft. And now all of a sudden he's blossomed to the point where it's just not a two-man draft anymore.
Well,
this guy is worth his weight.
Well, it's called comfort too, right? You understand your lane and your role and what you have to do when you got a guy like CP out there, you got Devin Booker out there, and also what's important about what we have to understand about this Suns team. When you got Monty Williams, man, I think he's not talked about enough. His preparation, how he gets those guys ready, how he keeps them calm, because he's not one of the coaches you see slamming downs. He kind of has a little Phil Jackson in him. He lets the game takes his course. He lets the ebb and flow of the game happen because he knows he has CP out there. He knows he has a Devin Booker out there. But when you have a young guy in eight and you say, hey, man, just follow. Just do your job. It's all going to come to you. You're going to get yours. Just stay the course. And you can see them believe in each other, and they're starting to get a feel. That they showed so much in the Valley that they were home. So it's easy to have confidence at home. But they had a machismo that we hadn't seen in a long time. And this team has been through their woes. You're talking about COVID. You talk about CP3 being banged up. You talk about Devin Booker. You talk about these little hiccups along the way, and they've been able to be collected and battle all that. I give the Suns a lot of credit, man. I'm pulling for them.
Well, and now the question you got to ask yourself if you're Milwaukee, right, is this it? Like, I mean, what should the panic button be for Milwaukee after that game last night? Because you can go back to their previous round so far in the playoffs. They've been a horrible starter in the previous series, right? They lost game one to Atlanta. They lost game one to Brooklyn.
Yep.
They won game one against Miami in the first round, but they needed overtime to do it, and then Middleton ended up taking over in that extra session here. And let's not forget about the Brooklyn series. Not only did they lose game one, then they went back in game two and they got embarrassed, Will. They lost by like 40. And right. Then Brooklyn started getting, you know, Kyrie got hurt, Harden wasn't himself, and then little by little they scratched and fought their way back into the series. If that doesn't happen to this Phoenix team, I mean, right now, the Suns have established themselves as a better club. Milwaukee, you don't like to overreact and say these are must-win games if it's truly not an elimination situation, but from where I'm sitting, that game two tomorrow night, that is virtually a must-win for Milwaukee.
100%, just from a confidence standpoint, too. You talk about Valley, you see the Greek Freak get the nod, he plays game one, he gives you all he has. But now you're in a situation where you don't want to be the Milwaukee Bucks and look at the Suns like, man, we got to treat CP3 as either he makes it or miss it type game. You got to have an answer, and you need an answer now. Chris Middleton has to show up for you. Brook Lopez has to do better. They got to have a better scheme for the pick and roll because you have to get these guys believing they can get it done, and you got to get Greek. You got to get – keep saying the Greek Freak. You got to get Giannis playing more effectively. You got to move him around. And Chris Middleton has to do – I think the guy that's hurt the Bucks the most has been Holiday. They need him to come alive in a major way.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Dude, they went and got him, okay? And look, he's been good. For the most part, he's been good. But remember, they gave up a ton of draft picks for him. They pay him a lot of money. Last night, on both ends of the floor, you know how many stretches of that game, the majority of the game, he looked like he was disinterested.
Yeah.
It looked like he didn't want to be bothered. They need more from him because the singular mismatch last night – in my opinion, the Phoenix backcourt versus the Milwaukee backcourt. It was not even a competition.
See, Chris Paul had 16 points in the third quarter. You got to answer that. You got to – some beside you as a man got to step up and be like, no, not today, old man. We got to dog it out. That didn't happen. It was Chris Paul's show, and Milwaukee had no answers for it. And you talk about what that means for Devin Booker. That frees up Devin Booker when you got a guy like CP3 to be able to score at will, when he's able to see the floor, when he's able to facilitate. When he's able to control the ebb and flow of the game, that allows Devin Booker to go out there and just be an assassin, in which he was last night. And then you got Ayton right now. He's more confident. He's crashing the boards. He feels he's in tune with Chris Paul. Listen, man, the Suns look great. They look good. And if you're Milwaukee, you don't want to panic, but something has to change because they don't look like they have an answer for anything because they try to adjust. It wasn't like they didn't try to do something. What they initially wanted to do was try to push Paul out and make him kind of, you know, stay out there so he wasn't able to get the pick and roll. That didn't happen. Well, and so now in a situation like, all right, what's next?
Well, you know what they did? They cut their nose to spite their face.
Yeah.
Because when they got back in that game in the second half, and they cut it down to 7, which, okay, that was good. But then all of a sudden, boom, like that, a couple of trips down the floor, Phoenix widened the lead again. But they went small. They went small, and they put Giannis at the 5. They put Lopez on the bench. Okay, so you want to say you don't want to get Lopez in a bad matchup with some of the guards like what happened in the first half on the defensive end. But here's the issue with that, though. Remember, Lopez is not chopped liver. Like, people hate on Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez is a quality player. Like, remember game 5 in the last round against Atlanta when Giannis didn't play?
Yeah.
Brook Lopez went off that night.
Him,
what,
Bobby
did he have,
Portis,
35
Chris
points?
Middleton, yeah. They showed
you
up.
You know what I'm saying?
That was a team win.
That was a team win.
Right.
So if you feel because of the way that the Suns play that Lopez is a liability for you on defense, well, then you're cutting out from your offense because then he's not going to be able to do what he does either down in the paint or he can even be a stretch big because he could step out beyond the arc and drain a three-pointer for you. So that's when we talk about coaching. That's when we talk about adjustments. That's what Budenholzer's got to do here.
Well, it's also you got to understand for the Suns, when you got guys like Cameron Payne and Cameron Johnson coming off the bench, adding, scrapping, fighting for you.
They're good.
I mean, as a team, and one thing we got to notice about this finals in particular, like you're having two complete teams play as a team, right? And we saw that when Giannis was out the last series, Bobby Porter showed up. Lopez showed up. You had Chris Middleton. Even Holiday had spurts where he showed up. They're going to need all these guys to contribute again because the Suns know who they are. They know who's the general. They know how to crash the boards. They know what they have coming off the bench to help them out. So it's going to be important for this Milwaukee Bucks team to say, hey, man, it's grip it and rip it time. We all got to come alive. It can't just rely on the Greek Freak. You can't just rely on Chris Middleton. Everybody's going to have to contribute, and they're going to have to contribute, especially on the defensive end.
No doubt about it. Will, just got to update everybody on what's going on out at Citi Field. Mets are down 3-0 in the bottom of the sixth. Remember, this is one of those Fugazi seven-inning games because it's the twin bill there out at Citi Field. Francisco Lindor, who we talked about earlier in the show, came up with the bases loaded. He struck out looking.
It was ugly. I watched it.
Borderline pitch, right? Borderline pitch on the corner of the plate. Could have gone either way, but something that close, you almost got to go after
for
it.
Yeah, you got to go. He was caught looking, and now you got Dominic Smith up trying to save the day. Citi Field, everybody's on their feet. They want this one.
They want this one. They're greedy. They want the sweep over a team that, you know, you might see in the postseason in the Milwaukee Brewers here. So bases loaded, one out. We'll keep you up to date as to what's happening out there at Citi Field. We talked a lot of NBA tonight, not just with the finals, of course, but, you know, how this possibly pertains to what the Knicks have to do to continue to get better here in this summer after making the postseason. If you're just joining us, Domingo Herman not going to start tonight. Had a root canal. We had some fun with the dentist things and stuff like that. Yanks will be in Seattle in an hour from now, seeing if they can win back-to-back games. They had a laugher last night out there in the Great Northwest. Aaron Rodgers. All right, that's been like
Batman.
The great mystery of the NFL for the last few months. And it's still a mystery, and we're only a few weeks away from the start of training camp, players, teams reporting, all that stuff, and he's kind of doubling down on the fact that he didn't want to be a Green Bay Packer anymore. He's tired of the front office, doesn't get along with the GM, says he wants the GM fired. You know, this stems from obvious things, but most notably the Jordan Love selection that they didn't tell him in advance that they were taking Jordan Love. So,
but by
last
the way,
night,
he's jumped out for the record and said he has no problem with Jordan Love.
Has no problem with Jordan Love.
Yeah.
But he has the problem with the guy who selected
Correct.
Jordan Love.
Right.
And let's also establish this. I think we're in agreement, right? If Aaron Rodgers isn't their quarterback, we're just talking about Green Bay. If Aaron Rodgers is not their quarterback this year, and if it is Jordan Love, this is a bad football team. It's a non-playoff team. So it's amazing how
talking about last year's MVP walking out the door.
It's amazing how one individual can shape the fortunes of a team because they go to Super Bowl contenders again with Rodgers to a team that's not even in the discussion without him, right?
And think about what it means for the NFL. You're going to open up with a Saints team who doesn't know who their quarterback is.
Wow.
In particular, a Packers team who won't have Aaron Rodgers. You want to start the season off like that?
No.
On primetime?
No.
You want to do that?
That's the Sunday night game, week one?
I think so, buddy. Yeah.
Let me pull up that NFL schedule. Obviously.
Saints, Packers, that's week one. And you're talking about A-Rod walking out for whatever reason. You're talking about the Saints, Jameis Winston, possibly? Come on. That's ugly.
Oh, it's not the primetime game. It's 425.
It's 425.
But it's still,
that's a big
week one game.
That's still a spot, yeah.
And, I mean, you think about it, those are two, like, institutions for the last almost, what, 15 years. Rodgers in Green Bay, Breeze in New Orleans, potentially both gone. And you're opening up, as you said, it could be either Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill against Jordan Love. Or dare I say, Blake Bortles.
Oh, wow.
Because Blake Bortles is in Green Bay. And,
he
at least has more experience than Jordan Love. They might give him the job.
There's no way you're starting Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles. Remember Blake Bortles. Blake Bortles, 4 years ago, only 4 years ago, the guy was 15 minutes away from taking the Jaguars to the Super Bowl.
In New England, yeah.
In New England.
Yeah. You got to go with Jordan Love. I can't even get it out. It would set Green Bay on fire if Blake Bortles is your starting quarterback, not Jordan Love. Especially, why Aaron Rodgers is walking out, to your point. It's the only reason.
It would set Green Bay on fire no matter who the quarterback is not named Aaron Rodgers.
That's true.
Right? Like, it's bad to begin with. So, anyways, last night on TNT, they had that charity golf, you know,
my brother's keeper, yeah,
pairing thing. Yeah, you know, Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers were teammates, and then Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson were also. And they had the duel, they had the match, and Aaron Rodgers' team won. So,
it's all about feeding America, baby.
All about feeding America, all for a good cause. And you got to feed America.
Yes.
And brush your teeth, too, or else you end up like Domingo Herman with the root canal.
And make sure you pick a soft hand dentist. No hairy
knuckles. Soft hand dentist.
Yes.
No doubt about that. So last night during the event, Brian Anderson, who, you know, outstanding broadcaster for Turner and TNT there, he was doing the play-by-play for the event. And they had Aaron Rodgers kind of mic'd up while he was in his little golf cart driving to the next hole. And so Brian Anderson was trying to grill Aaron Rodgers as best as possible and get as much info about what his plans are going to be this year. Like, is he going to be a Green Bay Packer? So take a listen.
Packers, Bears, any idea who's going to be there? Anybody who's going to be quarterbacking in the number 12 jersey?
Yeah, I don't know, BA. We'll see.
How about, see, won't we? How about September 12th then? How will you go for that one?
What's that one?
That would be the opener against the Saints.
Oh.
All cheesers rejoice.
Yeah, I don't know, BA. We'll see.
Okay.
I know you're a Milwaukee guy.
I know.
Aaron, everybody is on their toes. They want to know, man. They want to know.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm just having a good time out here with Tom. I'm trying to talk to him about it. He's going to keep playing or not, you know?
Hey, hey, Aaron, we go way back. You can just tell me. I'll keep it a secret. Hey, I promise I will not put it anywhere.
Charles, I'll tell you this week in Tahoe.
That was also Barkley and Larry Fitzgerald also chiming in there a little bit.
And that was uncomfortable, right? I felt bad for Aaron because he's there, obviously, my brother's keeper for the charity event to feed America. And he has Charles Barkley, Larry Fitz, what, Gerald was there?
Larry Fitz, yeah.
And Anderson, what was the guy's name?
Brian Anderson is the announcer, yeah.
They're grilling him about if he's going to be there. Like, let the guy golf. Obviously, you got to ask the question.
Well, I didn't think that was a problem.
It just sounded uncomfortable after a while.
Well, and you look, well, Rodgers, remember, he's kind of been Mr. You know, he's all about the beautiful mystery. That's the term he likes to use. And he's been kind of tight-lipped throughout the whole offseason. He's out, you know, in Hawaii hanging out with the fiance and going snorkeling and living the good life. People want to know, right? And, you know, we've heard so much being reported about what he said and what he wants, and apparently all this animosity that he harbors towards the organization and, I guess, the GM specifically there. So I think as we get closer here, you know, we're within 3 weeks away, they want a little bit of answers. I got no problem with the line of questioning. Now we need to find out what the answer is. And I've said all along, I don't think they're trading him.
No.
They're not trading him this year. If he wants to walk away and hold out this year and sit out the season, you know what? That's his prerogative. Let him do it. Now, remember, he didn't opt out of the season, so he still wants to play football. And the reason why I say that they're not going to trade him, Will, because think of it this way. What I just said a couple of minutes ago. If Aaron Rodgers is not on the Green Bay Packers in 2021, they're going to be awful, right? If they trade him to another team, they're going to get a boatload in return, probably in the form primarily of draft choices. The draft is come and gone for 2021, right? So a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, no Aaron Rodgers, that goes out the window anyway. The draft, the picks that you get in return for Aaron Rodgers, that can only help you in 2022 when the next draft rolls around. If he's going to be playing for another team, Willie, it's not going to be until next season, not in 2021.
And then this is every offseason, there's always some type of distraction. This is definitely a distraction for the Green Bay Packers, especially for those guys in that locker room, because they go from great to average if he's not in the locker room, especially from the defensive side of the ball. You need a guy who's going to be the neutralizer. If the defense gets beat up for whatever reason, and Green Bay has a pretty solid defense, you have a guy, Aaron Rodgers, who can get back out there, combat whatever scores on the board, and possibly take the lead and win a game for you. That helps, man. Confidence means a lot. It's hard to win in the NFL. I think sometimes it's overlooked because you do have quarterbacks, a couple of elite quarterbacks out there. You do have some big-time receivers. There are some big-time defenders. But it's hard to win a game in the NFL, and you don't have the guy who, when all end all be all, can put on a cape and win you a game. If he's not there, guys start to stop believing in the big picture, the philosophy of a team. And if he's getting, and if Aaron Rodgers, who, to my understanding, has always been a company man, if he starts having these ill feelings, or invalid, he hasn't said a whole lot, but if he starts walking away from an organization in a town like Green Bay and starts walking out the back door with his middle finger up, that sends ripples throughout the locker room. That maybe, hey, if they wouldn't let Aaron go for whatever reason, maybe, who to say they won't let me go and treat me a certain type of way? So this has magnitude. This has ripples. This is a ripple effect. So I hope they figure it out. But it looks like Aaron, he does. He's like, hey man, I can play. I can sit out. I'm fine.
But you know something, you know, I think nowadays players are more cognizant of the fact that this is a business, right?
Yes, 100%.
Every man for himself. You got to go get yours. You got to get paid. You got to do what's best for you. So far,
and it always wasn't like that, Dan.
No, definitely not.
Especially during my time playing, it was definitely, listen, no matter how.
You were an outcast if you thought like that.
No question. Almost if he was breaking the code, or if he was, you know, spitting on the creed of what it means to be an NFL player. It's all about the team. It's all about the city. Putting the city on your back. Now these young guys are like, hey, man, I got to worry about me first. And so it is a different time, and you're starting to see it, and you're starting to see it transformed right in front of your eyes. More guys worry about themselves and their brand and how, I mean, TikTok and social media. The guys are more in tune on the brand and who they are rather than what it means for the city and the organization if I make a move left or right.
The couple of guys, though, that have spoken out, now offensive players, Bakhtiari, who's his left tackle, and then Devontae Adams, who's his number one wide receiver.
Stud receiver.
Those guys have come out and said they support Aaron. You know, they support him up and down. What he's got to do, he's going to do what's best for him, and we got his back. Now, that's pretty telling because those are two influential voices in the locker room as well. But I think what it also speaks to is that those guys in that room, they know that their chances of being successful in any way, shape, or form this year ride solely that dude being in the huddle.
But what about – isn't the Adams, he's almost out of there, right? They have to figure out what they're going
to
do with him.
Right. He's going to have to get paid eventually.
He's looking like, if Aaron's gone, well, I may be packing up too. So this Aaron not showing his cards or him saying like, hey, I won't step foot in this building until this guy's gone, until these things change, it puts a panic – and I've used this word a lot tonight, but it does make an offensive line now look at a young kid like Jordan Love, say, man – we got to be more in our A game. Like when we had Geno Smith step in the building, and after Mark Sanchez, you know, was put on IR and he wasn't able to play in 2013, when Geno stepped into that lineup, and mind you, we were a vet line. You had the Brickashaw Ferguson, you had Nick Mangold, you had guys like myself, you had Austin Howard who had played a lot of games, you had a young left guard and Brian Winters. We were solid up front enough to handle anything, but seeing Geno step in that lineup, it brings up the angst because now as an offensive line, especially the veteran group, and with me, Brick, and Nick, our mindset is like, get the kid comfortable early. Let's get him comfortable early. Let's get him aware of what he needs to do early. You don't want him getting hit. You want him to feel comfortable. Valley, he may be as prepared. He may know where to go with the football. He may have already kind of an innate rhythm to how the game should go. But you want to get him – that's more pressure on the offensive line. That puts pressure on the running backs. That puts pressure on the receivers to not make mistakes. With Aaron, you can make mistakes because he can overcome those things. He can figure it out himself. He can make those big plays. He can make those throws. He can improvise with his feet. When you have a young guy, you don't want him to run around. You don't want him seeing ghosts. You want him to follow the script and get it done with the talent that brought him there. So it just brings a level of anxiousness that if you're a Green Bay Packer team, you didn't have last year because you had Aaron. You had Aaron. You win the NFC Championship. It was Tom and Aaron last year. And they were a play away or whatever away from bringing it home and showing up to the Super Bowl. So they're gonna have to figure out how they can get Aaron Rodgers back in the building. And maybe it's just like, hey, you fly to that man's house and you sell your soul, whatever you got to do. But you don't want to see Batman walk out that door.
And look, I agree with you 100%. I mean that is. And look, the coach, the GM, the president, they've all taken different trips out there to meet with him during the offseason to sit down, see if they could smooth things over. Hasn't worked yet up until this point. Now, you mentioned Devontae Adams, and you know why he's ticked off. Well, he's ticked off for a lot of reasons, and of course he's going to support his quarterback. $16 million in change he's due to make this year. Okay, that's a healthy number, and you know what? He's worth it. He's a great wide receiver. Then he's an unrestricted free agent after this season. Don't you think that a guy like Devontae Adams or any free agent wide receiver – they're going to get a contract based on what have you done for me lately, which means I need to go out there and produce this year,
right,
catch a lot of passes for a lot of yards, for a lot of touchdowns. Do you really think that he feels Jordan Love gives him the best opportunity to go out there and to put up crazy numbers so he's going to get paid crazy money like a top wide receiver? No, he knows Aaron Rodgers is the guy that has to do that for him.
Right, but since you don't know what's going on with Aaron, you somehow move your locker close to Jordan Love, like, hey, man, I'm the only thing that matters. I know you're going to be here for a while. I got to get these numbers. I got to get this paper. I'm the only thing that matters. So me and you are going to be twins for the rest of the season. I need to think how you think, and I got to walk how you walk. And this is what it is. Devontae Adams can't control Aaron Rodgers' situation. He's got to fall in love with Jordan Love real quick, and he's got to have a plan A. And that's Jordan Love.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.